Donkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonkodonk signs.
There we go. That's a good...
Redonka honka longka donkulus.
It sounds like a South Park thing.
Yeah.
Or if you'd played Metal Gear Solid, it sounds like any of the Metal Gears from Metal Gear Solid.
What are the Metal Gears?
I'm pretty sure the one from MGS5 is called, like, Seren... Dopa Lopus or something, you know, those classic.
What, a Greek surname?
No.
Serendopolis.
Serendopolis. No, it's not a Greek surname. It's not just a robot of a big Greek father.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Metal Gear Solid.
I don't know if there's solid Greek representation in Metal Gear Solid.
No, I don't think there is, to be honest. They're mostly American. There might be a reference to feta at some point.
Nice.
Thanks. I know my Greek. Anyway, we need to retell the James Cameron story, so I'll tell it here, podcast listeners. Welcome to the... Hey guys, it's episode like something of the Nerd Geek podcast. Welcome back, geekers.
You are really going to regret that when this goes out.
To who?
To the Nerd Geek listeners. They're already an established group.
They're endeared to us. What are you talking about? They'll love the shit we throw into their faces.
Okay.
I mean, loved listeners. Adored listeners.
Right.
So, what are we talking about today, George?
So you just want me to segue onto your joke that you found hilarious.
Yeah. It's not even that funny. I don't really want to retell it.
You
know what? Let's not.
So we were talking about James Cameron.
Shut the fuck up. We've got to think of other things to talk about now. We've got to be more original.
Okay.
Are you drawing a large lizard leg?
I'm just trying to copy the texture at the moment.
A cock?
No.
Okay.
George,
fill in what we're doing right now. You're not being a very good co-host.
I am. I'm fetching something from my brain that I was about to say. I've lost it now
because
of the negative feedback.
Oh my god. No wonder I'm the charismatic host under the brick.
I think soon enough you're going to be hosting a one-man podcast.
Just me talking to a wall in discussion with myself.
I was going to say, yeah, my sister listened to our podcast and she said it was pretty shite.
Yeah, I know, which was really upsetting. Because
she said, send me an actual podcast if you ever do it. But she said it was cute.
She's the wrong audience.
She said it was cute to hear us giggling, but that was...
Oh, we're cute, are we? That fucking... Oh, outrageous. How is that even a compliment? We're not cute, we're manly. How dare she? How dare she say something like this?
Yeah.
I mean, no, yeah, I do imagine. She's not in... Like, why would she... engage with any of the stuff we're spouting?
I had to provide so much context behind what a Megazord was.
I know you did.
I had to say that this was our movie pitch
and we
were talking about high fantasy and goblins before.
She probably found it charming that, yeah, she heard us giggling together and having a good time.
Yeah.
Like the way a big sister would of a younger brother who she thinks is an idiot. But she was definitely not.
Who she
right
thinks
audience.
Has a few problems.
We need to find an audience that's malleable, easily manipulated, and will buy our merch.
Easily impressed.
I think. Yeah. So our mums.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you got your Jordan Geek t-shirt, Catherine? Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I do, Jenny. She's Irish. I can't even get my Irish down today.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are we going to talk about today on our podcast?
Gosh, you love your heart opens.
Dude, we have to do something, otherwise this is a nonsensical mess that you cobble together on your fucking Mac.
I like my nonsensical messes.
No, because there's no context to it.
Okay.
It just hard cuts into a joke,
yeah.
And everyone goes, what?
But then...
Even I go, what the hell is the context?
All right.
And I was there.
But then, in that case, wouldn't we have to plan our opening?
What? No, we can just do any.
Okay, fine. We'll do it your way.
We're just good content producers, which we're not being currently.
Alright, we'll do it your way, go on.
Okay. Well, I've really run out of steam. we need to think of content.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Norge Geek Podcast.
Now for our hot beatboxing theme.
All right, we'll let it run in now. Okay, we're going to really have to improve on that one.
Boom, ooh.
I'll do a lot of work on that post-production.
Dude, these are all of our segues. Tell me they're not pretty good, come on.
Yeah, they're... I'm liking more and more this idea of you hosting your own podcast,
just trying
without
to entertain myself. I mean, I'm not beyond it. You know how much of an egotist I am.
Yeah.
George,
mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the Loch Ness Monster? That's always a fun topic. I always love cryptids and monsters of the sort. And we've talked about the Loch Ness Monster a surprisingly large amount of times for some reason.
I remember when you left... when you left.
For good? What are you talking about?
Yeah, for good. And that was a good time.
Yeah.
No, I remember when I left for Aberdeen and we had that conversation about Loch Ness Monsters.
But we were going to go more into it.
Yeah, and then you said, hey, man.
I
want
to continue this, yeah.
I want to continue this. And I thought you had something really interesting to say. So, let's talk about Loch Ness Monsters. Well, I went to Loch Ness.
Yeah.
One time.
What's it like?
It's a nice little... It's a nice little
Isn't it
town.
Massive?
No, not the
Oh, you mean the town.
Yeah. The town's small and it's quaint, and we stopped by a tea shop.
There's a suspiciously large tourist shop.
Yeah.
Just selling merch. Nessie t-shirts.
There was a merch shop as well.
Of course. Why wouldn't you? Of course you'd have one.
Yeah.
Bloody Loch Ness.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice... in keeping with the town's quaint sort of small-town feeling, it wasn't too soulless.
There was a man playing a Scottish banjo on his porch.
Yeah.
Which is just a haggis, but with strings across it.
Yeah. And we went on that a tour boat, and the man who was the leading talker, the tour guide, he was saying that he actually believes in the Loch Ness Monster, and it wasn't just tourist drivel. I mean, he genuinely did. He was like, "Yeah, I actually think that there's something down there," because he said he's worked on that boat for 10 years. As a tour guide or whatever, or maybe it was 5 years.
Right.
I mean, he's lived there as a fairly significant amount of time, and he said every time they would scan the waters underneath with their sonars, they would always find that there was this big chunk of thing that wasn't water and wasn't rock and was organic material.
What was the guy's name?
I don't know, man. I'm not.
Let's just call him Sam.
Yeah, Sam.
What's that big chunk of thing under the water? It's definitely not my dead wife. What was that, Sam?
So he was fairly convinced.
Mm. He was Scottish.
He was Scottish.
Should we be doing Scottish accents for this?
No.
Scotland. Oh, George. I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nessie. So, yeah, he was like, yeah, man, I think that there's a monster down there.
Did he elaborate, like, what sort of monster?
Nah, he was just like... No, he's just seen the radars, you know?
So he's just seen a mass.
Yeah. And if you were the Scottish government, I mean, why would you invest so much money into exploring what it actually is, right?
I don't know.
So it's a mystery that might never be confirmed if Nessie never surfaces. You know, maybe it just wants to be left alone.
I mean, wouldn't you if you were a prehistoric lizard?
Yeah, I feel like he's not had great reception whenever he, you know, surfaces.
In the in World War II, an Italian newspaper reported that German Axis bombings of Britain had led to the death of Nessie. Which then provoked Scottish newspapers to release another thing, saying that Nessie was in fact alive and had survived the Nazi bombings. But the very fact that this random Italian newspaper thought, "How do we cut the British to their core? We tell them we've nuked Nessie out of the lake," and that somehow will get them like incensed. But it did provoke a response, because apparently, yeah, people were like very sad about it and pissed off.
I feel like Nessie will be, I mean, the Scottish, the head of Nicola Sturgeon will be like, guys.
Is she Nessie?
No.
In a skin costume?
No, she's like, guys.
Don't question why I've got fins.
The Scottish population is old enough. You no longer need to be patronised, and she'll be like, the Nessie wasn't
no,
real.
No, do it in the accent.
Oh, don't you know now? Nessie.
The most Canadian Scot ever. Don't you know about Nessie?
Yeah, I'm going to have to stick with a bit of Canadian in my
about
Scottish.
About Nessie. Made her up. I did. On a Sunday.
Yeah.
It's slowly becoming just northern, I think.
She was like, don't you know? Actually is really difficult.
Actually. Actually.
Do Scottish people even say the word actually?
No,
I feel like
rarely. It... they say exactly.
She says, Nessie, all along, she was...
this is so...
she was...
forced.
She was just...
She was just me in a costume. I was just pranking ya. And people are like, yeah, but there's been sightings since the early 1900s, and the original Nessie myth has been supposedly traced back to like the year 1500, where a monk visiting Scotland came across people. I don't know why I know so much about Nessie history. But he came across these people by the side of one of the tributaries that feeds the loch. And they were burying a body, which supposedly this guy had fallen into the water and been mauled by a sea beast. And he blessed the body and everything. And supposedly this was one of the early examples of there being a creature in the waters of Loch Ness. But so Nicola Sturgeon is this ancient being. That just wears rubber?
Yeah, well, she's like, don't you know?
The Sturgeon family have kept the Loch Ness monster myth going since my wee grandpappy, Nick Sturgeon.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is run dry.
Well, you haven't let me finish.
Sorry, carry on.
You just hijacked my point and was like, anyway, this is run dry. What next?
Okay, you go. Continue. Yeah, Nicola Sturgeon comes out one day.
She's like, don't you know?
yeah.
That's really her clutch phrase.
Don't you know?
And she's like, Nessie all along, she does exist in our hearts.
Oh, that's such a con.
it's like the Scottish Santa.
Oh, that's the worst. It's in here.
It's in our hearts and our childhood imaginations. I don't know where that went.
Yeah,
that accent. So Nicola Sturgeon, the Grace's reveal is Nicola Sturgeon isn't a Scottish, middle-aged, sensible woman,
yeah,
but a Canadian college student, basically.
Yeah, he's just basically called a bunch of Loch Ness monster hunters infants. Because she just said these childhood imaginations. And there's people there, presumably who are like big, you know, have been searching all their lives, dedicated a lot of time to this.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Back in the, I think it was the late 1800s, there was a war going on. But they got one of the like admirals or generals of the Royal Navy to come investigate Nessie sightings. And to think that the stories of the Loch Ness Monster were so convincing, or was so prominent in that period's pop culture, that like you could get a general during a war to come to Loch Ness to investigate a monster sighting, with a bunch of presumably drunk Scottish people who were just like, yeah, we saw something.
Yeah.
And he's like, was it a seal? And they're like, nay, it was Nessie.
Yeah.
Nicola Sturgeon told us.
Winston Churchill was straight up like, do we send, you know, our most experienced general to Germany, or to defend the British Isles, or do we just send him to...
Mr. Churchill, I don't understand this command. It says we need 500 of our men to stand around the edge of Loch Ness. What for?
500 of our best men. Take them right from the SAS.
Yeah. We've got to protect Nessie in case of a German landing.
Well, the Germans were quite proactive.
They were
in bombing Nessie, so.
Yeah, but what fucking, what German bomber is going for a lake? That's like the least useful target for a bomb. Like, imagine it. It goes underwater and just displaces a bit of water.
That's the least effective
piece of shit ever.
It would affect the morale of all the Scots fighting in World War II. Yeah,
they bombed the haggis factory.
How
are we going to produce a haggis?
I think we've established that it's the Scottish Santa, is it not?
As
Nicola Sturgeon. It's like if the Germans bombed Santa in the North Pole, if he were real. Right?
There's so many layers to it. What age were you when you found out Santa wasn't real? Did you even have Santa as a presence in your youth?
Yeah. I don't know. I think the belief just simmered out. I think I was always a bit of a skeptic, but I remember...
You are such a joyless child. You fucking dick. I was always a skeptic. Just this prat of a six-year-old.
Well,
Mum, how can you leave out milk and cookies when there is no Santa? You're such a little git.
Yeah, well... What happened one Christmas, this was a pretty magical moment.
Okay.
Was that my dad said, you know, he must have primed it some way. Like, he must have had some sort of hypnotic thought control. Or, like, dropped the word call Santa every, like, you know, every once in a while.
He just really, really uncomfortably fit it into every sentence.
But
can you pass me the brush up, call Santa?
but what happened was he said... Okay, George, here's a piece of paper, and it's a magical piece of paper.
Mm.
Write down whatever your wish is, and Santa will consider it.
Yeah.
And
consider it.
Okay, I don't.
Oh my god!
I don't know what he said.
This is the least whimsical Christmas ever. You there barely believing?
No. I think he convinced me that it was a straight line to Santa, right?
Okay, that's pretty good.
So. I wrote on the piece of paper, I probably would have gone back and...
asked for mad cash.
Asked for I don't know, some mad cash.
okay, yeah.
But I asked for Santa to call me, because...
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, that was...
Because you were
sweet.
A lonely boy.
Yeah. And so we took the piece of paper, we went on our balcony, and we were on the 11th floor. And he took my piece of paper and he set it on fire.
Okay.
with his lighter.
What the fuck?
And he said,
this is near a child.
And he said, George, Santa doesn't exist. No. So he set it on fire, then he dropped it from our balcony.
Alright, that's
so
not a threat. Dangerous to people below.
Well, it would...
A flaming bit of paper hits you on the head. Falls on it fell on her baby.
Yeah. Well, Santa takes sacrifices. Yeah. So, something like 5 minutes later, my dad says, there's a call for you.
Mm.
And I go to our, you know, dial-up telephone, and a call comes in, and a voice says... Okay, I'm not gonna do that. He goes, ho, 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 this is Santa.
In case you didn't recognize me.
No, okay, he said...
This is me!
He wasn't that abrupt. He was like... I was like, who's this? And he was like, well, don't you know, don't you know.
Why is it Mrs. Doubtfire?
This is Father Christmas.
Okay, very... Yeah, that's pretty sweet. How did he do it?
I still don't know. I think he must have called one of his friends and was like, hey, could you maybe pretend...
Hey, Chris Kringle, can you just give my son a call? Ho, ho, ho! Of course I can, Nick.
Yeah.
You know, you've always kind of reminded me of Santa in some ways. Oh, gotta go.
Yeah, so it was quite special. And then I went to bed that night and I said, Dad, I'm no longer a Christian.
What?
I'm a Santa Clausian.
Did you actually?
Yeah, I did.
You were such a...
Because I had no clue what Christianity was, but I knew that it was good to be one.
Child. I'd have hated you. If you were a child and I was a child next to you, I'd have bullied you.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty lame line.
Mum,
but...
I'm a Santa Clausian.
But I think...
Shut up, John. I'm going to bed.
Given all the effort...
I'm so tired.
Given all the effort that my dad put in, I thought I might as well put in a cute movie...
Oh, fucking
movie, Christmas movie line.
When is that in the Christmas movie?
I don't know.
Oh, no, you've made up it for your own Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's a piece of shit. No one would write that.
It was special. I liked it. I said...
Nah, this loving memory of yours, I'm saying it's bad.
Yeah. Well.
No, it is a very sweet story. And I think that's, like... That's super nice of your dad to do.
Yeah, it was nice. It was.
Cherished Christmas memories.
All right, I'm going to go for a pee. I'll
be back. Oh, great. I'll keep the listeners entertained. All right. So what do we actually think of that story? I think it was... I thought it was very whimsical and interesting. But George is going to have to listen to this in editing, so I'm going to say only nice things where he actually think I'll make fun of him. Oh, there's noise. Yeah, it was a very whimsical story. George is fairly, a fairly sentimental person, but it's not often you get a whimsical story out of him. So that's really sweet to hear. Makes me a bit nostalgic for my own whimsical Christmas stories, which of course I'll pander to and tell you when George is back. But yeah, George, this is your... oh God, he's coming.
Yo, I'm back. Right. So Nick, tell me how cute you were as a kid compared to me. On a nice...
On a scale.
Yeah. No.
In story form. Well, as you know, my good friend George, my oldest friend George, I was a miracle baby, and as a result, I was just the cutest piece of shit has ever lived, really.
Uh-huh.
You've seen many a photo, me covered in paint, you know. Ha ha ha, how's he got paint on his face, that silly child? What's he doing? That's not what painting is. You paint a canvas. Your face isn't a canvas. Ha 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 ha. You know, the classics. What isn't... I'm trying to think of, like, cutesy Christmas memories. Well, this has turned from
maybe
talking about Santa as a as a figure into just talking about Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, because we used to do Christmases with my cousins. They'd come and visit us. We would do movies, you know, like home movies that my brother would kind of roughly like piece together as we were going along. And normally they featured some form of Santa. One of the ones I've told you about is the drunk Santa one.
Oh, right.
Santa's down his luck. So I'm about six. My cousins
I remember
are here.
That one.
It's always an exciting time at Christmas. I always have this... I mean, everyone has their own personal sentimental memories of Christmas, but mine are always, like, the waiting for, like, the cousin's car to pull up and looking out of the window and it's all, like, frosted up. And you're waiting just so desperate for them to come and entertain you. And then the making of the video and everything and just spending time with the siblings who didn't want to play with you because you were a stupid child. So this time, I was like six, I was Santa, And the idea behind the film was, this is a Santa who's so... I don't know why, he's just so disillusioned with being Santa. He's done it maybe so long. He started drinking. So he starts trying to find ways for him to revitalize his life and his career. I think it was darker than that. I think it was like his wife had died. I think Mrs. Claus had maybe died or left him.
Oh, great.
So, you know, very happy-go-lucky. So it starts off with Santa at like an AA meeting. And I thought for a six-year-old, I was doing some pretty good drunk acting. I was slurring. I was talking about scotch. I was calling people idiots. It was great fun. Santa tries to go on Pop Idol to try and get some quick 15 minutes of fame. So I had to sing.
Right. He wasn't famous enough.
No.
For just being Santa.
No. He's trying to revitalize his career, his image. My brother made me
a real career.
Sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Mm-hmm.
And he was playing Simon Cowell. And in the video, he kind of edited it so it went from like me singing to a clip of him with like slicked back black hair, like pouting, and he's like, I don't think that was very good. And then it's a quick cut, he goes to like spit, and then it cuts quickly to my face, and then my sister lobbed a glass of water on me to make it look
his
like...
His spit was so liquidy.
Yeah.
And so thin.
But I wasn't some... I have a like the memory of it happening. And for some reason, I wasn't aware that they were going to throw a glass of water on my face. So even though it's literally in front of me, I don't realise until they throw it on me that that's what's happening. So I was very distressed. Ultimately, after Pop Idol, Santa's down his luck even more so than he was at the beginning. You're thinking, he's hit rock bottom. How is he going to go any further? Well, he's at the top of some stairs. We had a little Santa plushie. All of his elves are gathered at the bottom of the stairs and they're kind of looking up to me at the top. And they're all saying, they're pleading and they're saying, Santa, please don't jump, please don't do it. And me, as drunk Santa, kind of leans forward. It cuts to the plushie rolling down the stairs and it cuts back and it's me at the bottom of the stairs dead. And then everyone cries over the corpse of Santa and then we finished it. And we decided to show all of our parents this, who obviously were confused and rightfully like concerned, because mm-hmm. these children had just made a fairly depressing Christmas story about a quite a realistic depiction of what Santa would be like had he been working for centuries, kind of worked down
right.
a capitalist system. So that's my Christmas memory.
So it was a critique. Did Simon Cowell ever, was he ever portrayed to be quite nonplussed by his watery jugular, that's not the right word. I was thinking about a water jug.
Fantastic. No, he doesn't seem that bothered by it.
Just great quantity of spit.
It cut back to Joe afterwards and he kind of frowns and he pulls his eyebrows down into a kind of aggressive shape and he just says,
well described.
You're out.
That's cool.
And then I leave sheepishly and then and every year we would do these in some variation upon the theme of Christmas. And yeah, that was always a big part of our, that was literally, we'd film it all on this old, like tape recorder, like this VHS kind of, video recorder. And
right.
we wouldn't edit it. We would just like do stop starts. So we wouldn't really look back on it. So it was very, very shaky. If you didn't do a scene properly, it would, you know, just stay in there.
Right. Okay. Well, that's quite cool. That's kind of lame.
And then we would show, we basically just force feed it to our family who would have to watch it on Christmas Eve. So we were pretty good at, we were like Blumhouse in how quickly we were producing top quality content.
Well, okay. Well, that's cool. Did you know that there was one time, Just to take the spotlight back a bit. But there was this time where I this was a really weird memory because you were like you didn't realize at the time, or you misremembered it, because you didn't think that they were going to throw a glass of water at you.
Mm.
I was just thinking about, like childhood memories and shit.
Mm.
And I remember, did I tell you about this? It was, like,
don't know.
That one time where I saved up all my pocket money just so that I could go on a sweetie shop spree.
Mm.
And I went to the little shop, and the shop around the corner.
Yeah.
And I had spent something like £5 worth of money on all these sweets, all these different kinds of sweets.
Mm.
And so I thought, in what, my maybe 11-year-old mind, that I would like create this ultimate sweetie thing. Mm. And so I put all the sweets that I had, I unwrapped them, I put them all in a bowl, in a great mixing bowl. And I thought I'd make something really good out of it. Mm. So I added some flour. I think as you do. Right. If you ever want to make something really nice, yeah, come together.
You add flour, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, maybe I added some milk with all these M&Ms and the just chocolates. Essentials.
Yeah.
Just mixed, swirled about.
Mm.
And I think my memory at that point, like, got conflated with this other memory, because I put it in the oven, I think.
Well, yeah, I assume so.
And it came out these perfect Yorkshire puddings. I don't even know what happened, but they came out as these Yorkshire puddings that tasted like Yorkshire puddings.
Okay.
Like, they didn't even taste very sweet at all.
Okay, well, and these are probably two memories, right?
They're probably two memories, or I've discovered something new about sweets and Yorkshire puddings.
Yeah, if you just put sweets into flour and milk, it makes Yorkshire puddings. Is that like the life hack?
Yeah. And it was really odd, because I was like, I was like, what just happened there? And I don't know, maybe there's something profound in that about the nature of memory. But but you know.
All right. Okay, so you're still that 6-year-old pretentious arsehole as you've ever been. Because yeah, you're there talking about your memory of eating Yorkshire puddings, and the comment you make is, I wonder if there's something profound here.
That's
okay.
A comment I often make about my actions.
Do you ever think we're too analytical of our own thoughts and actions sometimes, to our detriment?
No.
I mean, but by the very nature of the question, it kind of is overly analytical, isn't it? You're analysing the nature of your own analysing. That's ridiculous.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I feel like you're not even engaging with it.
What, why do you?
Yeah, I think over-analysis is a huge part of especially us two.
Mm-hmm. Really? What? Explain.
No, I just feel like it's a tendency of ours. Don't you agree? Why are you looking at pictures of RuPaul?
Look at this fucking gif.
This is not the time. What's going on? That's so dumb. Okay.
That's so ridiculous.
Why is that even...
I think it's because RuPaul has such large earrings on.
No, yeah, I got that bit, but I just... Who's that guy? Is he like an Olympic acrobat?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
To give a description of what we were looking at, it was a GIF that focused on this kind of straining, hot, like, leotard-wearing man who looks like he's doing some sort of acrobatics, like holding onto a pole, onto a pole, and then it pans back and it's he's suspended between RuPaul's earrings, which are dangling down.
Dangling hoops, I think.
Dangling hoops, and she's just on a panel, presumably on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
And George was just laughing at it while I was trying to have a serious conversation about whether or not he overanalyzes to our own detriment. Which, by the very fact you're not engaging with it, is criminal.
I think we, do? Sure. I think sometimes we do. Actually, I don't think I do. I think I'm quite chill.
He
says
overanalyzing his actions.
I think I'm quite I don't know the effects at all, if there are any, of my overanalysis. Why do you feel that?
Well, you're never conscious of it.
Yeah, but you're conscious about it now, aren't you? In reflection.
Yeah, in reflection, but at the time you're not aware that you're overanalyzing something.
Pray, give some examples. Now you're stuck.
Okay, let's say something happened to you, an interaction that made you feel uncomfortable, and then you went into, like, a spiral of thought about why you were made uncomfortable by it.
Mm-hmm.
Say I grabbed your titty.
Right, which you do.
Often. And then you start thinking, that was annoying. I was trying to do some drawing. But then a part of your brain went, actually, I kind of enjoyed that. Or did I? Did I enjoy it? And then you start assessing, what were the reasons why I enjoyed that? And then you go, maybe I did enjoy it. Should I try again? And then you start overanalyzing, and then you're in bed at night.
Is this your way of coming out?
And you're just thinking about what would happen if, and you start touching your boobs and your penis. And you, and then you come.
Right, I think that's the end of that. What's your next question?
So you're saying you wouldn't?
Yeah, so how's Dark Souls going?
Oh, what a homophobe. He doesn't even want to engage with gay culture.
I wasn't aware we were engaging with gay culture until you were talking about coming at your own tits. Which I think is far too reductive of gay culture.
Oh, God. Oh, George.
Do I ever think about that? No.
Okay, what if I give you a hypothetical?
Okay.
George. Mm-hmm. Imagine you are living in rural France. You're married, you have two kids. You get a letter one day. It says, I know what you did last summer. The summer before, flashback. By the way, you're played by yourself. Your wife is played by Willem Dafoe.
Mm-hmm.
No, your wife is played by iCarly.
That's a TV show, but
and
the whole cast of iCarly comes together to play my wife.
Yeah, they swap each scene. It's like that Mitchell and Webb sketch where they swap
Sherlock Holmes.
On Sherlock. They swap every edit.
Mm-hmm.
So the cast of iCarly play your wife. Your best friend, Nigel, is played by Willem Dafoe.
Right, so we're not really considering me anymore.
Well, it is you.
Okay.
It's George Little. So you live in the south of France. You get a letter, it says, I know what you did last summer. You respond immediately by going, oh, shit, they know. Flashback. We flashback to the summer prior. You, your wife, and Nigel, played by Willem Dafoe, are all on a boating trip.
And what did I do last summer? Maybe touch my tits so hard that I came?
No. One night, you and Nigel are out on the top deck of the boat. Your wife's sleeping. And you're both talking. Imagine I'm Nigel and you're you. How would this conversation go? So firstly, let me frame it for you. Ah, George! I'm playing Willem Dafoe. Ah, it's so good that you invited me here. Spider-Man! Wrong movie. So, look at the water. Oh, it's changed. Is that a mermaid? Suddenly, a mermaid with my face on it appears from out of the waves and gives you a cheeky wink.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to this?
You give me so much to go off of. Right. So there's a lot of facts. So you haven't even told me So you haven't even. So is this what I'm doing last summer?
We'll get to that.
Okay, so the whole premise is this letter that I received.
Yeah.
About.
But we're finding out what you did last summer.
Okay. Okay, so this is gonna have to end in me doing something bad or something good or whatever.
Should I just tell you what happens?
Go for it. I really don't know how to respond to a mermaid with your face winking at me.
So you go, oh, you're repulsed. You go, oh, what is that thing? I can't stand it. Get me away from it. The mermaid doesn't have a voice. It just sounds like... Willem Dafoe looks to you and says, what? How can't you love something that beautiful? He then leans over the side of the boat and kind of grabs me in his arms and pulls me over onto the boat. Flipper and all. You see my full size. I'm about 6 feet long. My tail takes up about 75% of my body. I've got kind of a little mermaid bra on.
Right. So you're just describing your own fantasies right now.
No, you're there.
Okay.
I get pulled out. Willem Dafoe's cradling me in his arms. I'm a water-bound creature, so obviously I can't exist up on top of the... above the waves. So I'm very viscerally choking. A lot of... Basically a 20-minute scene of Willem Dafoe going, cooey, cooey, and me going... To which you just kind of watch and open another pink gin martini.
Right.
And you go, I don't know why I'm even here. I could be in bed with my wife. To which Willem says, well, why don't you just leave us? I'm still gutturally... You say, oh, you've got to let him go. He can't survive upon this landy land boat we have here, Willem. And Willem says, but I love him. I can't let him go. I'm very close to death. I've gone purple. What's the shade before purple? Pink?
Yeah, pink.
I've gone pink. I'm very close to dying. You have an antique scimitar collection in the bottom of the boat. You have also got an antique musket and a large stick. What do you do? Willem Dafoe is cradling me, a dying mermaid. You don't know anything about me. Maybe I'm the last of my species. Who knows? And he has no intent of putting me back in the water. You are there, presumably confused.
Oh.
Well, that bottle of water fell over supernaturally.
Right, so...
What do you do?
So the prompt is directing me towards violence.
No, not necessarily. There's a bed as well. Your wife's in bed.
On the same boat?
Yep.
I thought it was a small fishing boat.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's just,
the boat
it's
in
just
my,
got really,
in my
it's just
mind
really far under the water.
Has expanded about five times my imagination.
Yeah, it's about right.
I say, Willem Dafoe. I have an antique scimitar collection. Let this poor mermaid go. Otherwise, or I'll chop your hands off. Or what I can do is,
help me.
What do I do? I'll throw Willem Dafoe Nigel, overboard, and you can swim away. And then I'll...
That's us both falling into the water.
Mm-hmm. Now, Nigel and you are in the water, so now...
You look over the edge of the boat, and you go, huh, I guess you'll be sleeping with the fishes. And Willem Dafoe looks up at you and says, God damn you, George Little! As I drag him under the water...
Yeah.
The next day, you've returned to the harbour. Your wife says, oh, George, What was all that commotion last night?
So she's the queen.
Maybe. George, what was all that commotion last night? To which you say, oh dear, your voice has changed slightly. Oh dear, you're never you mind, your pretty little head. Flash forward. We go back to you receiving the letter. And you go, I don't know who could have sent me this. It's no. And you see in the corner is the signature of none other than Willem Dafoe.
Wait, what was the letter again?
It said, I know what you did last summer.
Oh, right.
And you go, God damn it. And your wife comes in and says, oh, what's the problem, my baby? And you say, the guy that I thought I killed last summer when he was trying to keep a mermaid above the surface while she was choking to death and I threw him into the water and presumably killed him has actually not died and instead sent me a threatening letter saying he'd kill my family. And she reads the letter and says, oh, there's nothing here about killing your family. And you go, oh, I just assumed that part. But, oh, it's dire need of your help. And then suddenly, bam, the door gets kicked in.
And it's...
Who do you think it is?
Willem Dafoe.
Ah! Spider-Man! Mm-hmm. I'm back to get you because you threw me into the water. He's very unsure of himself. He's been walking around the streets.
He spent a bit too long in the water and now he has brain damage.
I drank too much seawater. He's turned a bit piratey.
So he...
Seawater!
So he's probably spent a bit over the appropriate time in the water because he was down with the mermaid.
Oh yeah, he's pruned a lot.
He's really pruned. He's probably suffered some brain damage. So
I would describe his colour as salmon.
His eyes are probably a bit, you know, crossed.
Bloodshot. His teeth very rotten.
Is this the climax? Is this the fight scene?
He smells of decaying fish. He's wearing rags that are barely holding onto him. He's clutching a harpoon and he looks at you and he just goes, you kept me from my mermaid! And then he goes to throw his harpoon.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think happens here?
The harpoon...
Wrong, I'll just tell you.
Okay.
Suddenly, there's a gurgling from your bathroom. And you're like, what's that noise? And Willem Dafoe goes, no. His voice keeps changing. No! I know what that noise is! Suddenly... from behind a locked bathroom door, you hear something slap against the door, a very loud, wet, like, and just like, it's just hitting against everything.
That sounds like what's going flesh on? Against flesh.
Shut up. It's a very slappy, sloppy, and it smacks against it. And you're like, what's that? The door's getting beaten down by something. Suddenly, I, a mermaid, appear from behind the door, having smashed it in with my tail. My flappy tail. The door comes down, bash! Right onto your wife's foot. Mm-hmm. And she goes, ugh! It falls over. She faints from the pain.
Uh-huh.
The children rush in. They carry her body out. Don't worry. She's fine.
Willem Dafoe goes,
my baby, cuckoo baby! And he goes, for some reason he hasn't stopped the motion of throwing the harpoon, but it's taken him a good, 10 minutes to throw it. Because of how long has actually been going. So it's incredibly slow. And he goes, no! He releases the spear. You're stood in place going, no! I'm diving in front of you, going, in incredible slow motion. I mean, it takes a good, 2 minutes for this scene to finish. It's just quick cuts between Willem Dafoe going, nyeh! And you going, no, and me going, yeah.
You do eventually, all of our accents justice there.
Eventually, the harpoon cuts me right through the abdomen, splits right through the scales, and it pierced me completely. and I'm dead. To which Willem Dafoe says, I can't live anymore! And he harpoons himself in the throat.
Right, well, good story.
Credits.
I think there was a lot to explore there.
Credits, and then the song, I Touch Myself by The Vinyls. And so, you're singing, I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself.
Okay, so...
And then it cuts back in, and you go, just for clarity's sake, my wife isn't dead. I'll kill her later. And then it cuts back, I don't want anybody else.
So I was thinking that, going into this, I was thinking that it was what? Some sort of, like, you know, Doctor Who adventure book, and I could pick one option or the next. But really,
I was cut
off, and you just told the whole story. This fucked up story that was sitting in your mind for far too long. You were like, no, I'll tell you what you did. You went like this. You went, no. And then I threw the harpoon, and then your wife was like, ah, dude, fucking hell.
I had to stop him talking, listener. I had to bite him.
Okay, well, that's great.
Did you like my story?
Yeah, I did. I liked your story, yeah.
That's surprising.
Let me show you the spitting image thing, because it was... I feel like this is pretty good. I feel like your Queen accent was pretty spot on.
Thank you. You don't think my Willem Dafoe was bad?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, thanks.
Just going to say it. We're concerned about the way the firm is being run.
Fuck off. Where's my sherry?
Damn it, we're hemorrhaging countries. Even Barbados wants out of the monarchy.
I just like that. They're fuck off.
Well, she's got like my mum / grandma's voice there, where it's like, fuck off.
Yeah.
I'll get you.
Yeah, I was just referring back to that because I thought...
Corgis, Philip.
Why aren't you on?
Why am I not on spitting image?
Yeah. That is...
I'll let you spit on my image.
Oh. Okay.
Ah, what the hell, George?
What if I check my iPhone and it's been dead for 20 minutes?
That would be really funny.
Okay.
It's not recorded at all. And I'm just there trying to justify to myself having done like a 20 to 30 minute skit.
Yeah.
But at least I entertained you.
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining.
Thank you, I am pretty entertaining. Anyway, so this has been the Nerd Geek Podcast. Tune in next time, then we'll do more cool kids things. Catch you later, honeys.
Okay.
You're not going to say goodbye to our listeners?
Bye.
Oh, my God.